you're a regular listener of this show or other shows on CJSF, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us about what you like and why you like it, as well as ways we can improve our programming. To leave comments, please email cjsfprog@sfu.ca or call 778-782-4423. This information can also be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.
CJSF 90.1 FM would like to remind listeners that the following program is a repeat broadcast.
Hey everyone, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your host for Analog Archives, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. And today we have a very special episode. Let's get into it. So, a couple of months ago, I came across a record in the archives here at CJSF that very immediately caught my eye. Filled with colorful drawings of everything from toilet paper, stalks of celery, a rubber duck, a hamster, even a little light bulb with a smiley face. I fully judged this record by its cover and decided to play it for Analog Archives. This record was Happy Go Lucky by 64 Funny Cars, a band from the late 80s / early 90s underground scene in Victoria, BC. Thankfully, our programming coordinator here at the station, Jesse Wensloff, so kindly pointed out to me that 64 Funny Cars had actually just come out with a reissue of the very same album, Happy Go Lucky, which originally came out in 1989. As someone who routinely finds awesome local bands from the 80s and 90s for this show, but also awesome local bands that have seemingly disappeared off the face of the earth, this felt especially promising, and I reached out to them for an interview. They responded, and I was able to get on a call with two of the band's founding members, Tim Chan and Colin McRae. We were able to talk about the band's origins, some of their serious and less serious inspirations, and how they got back together for this reissue. Throughout the interview, I'm going to be playing songs from Happy Go Lucky, so stay tuned for this very special episode of Analog Archives with 64 Funny Cars. Hope you enjoy.
I'm Tim Chan, guitar and vocals for 64 Funny Cars.
And I'm Colin McRae. I play bass because I'm the tall, awkward, and good-looking guy in 64 Funny Cars.
It's a good combo.
It's destiny. People ask me sometimes, like, what instrument do you play? I'm like, you clearly don't know music because you would know by by looking at me. I have to play bass.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What do you think I play? Come on.
Now, you know, from looking at other reviews, I know that this is a question you've been asked before, but I think it is a really cool story. So if you could explain how the name 64 Funny Cars for a band name came to be in the first place.
So we had our first practice together, Tim and Eric Lowe, the drummer, and myself, like in August of 1987. And then about a month after that, Eric Cottrell, our second guitarist, joined us. And we never started with a name. We just started with a number of songs that Tim had written and a few stupid covers. But Victoria music scene is pretty small. And so within short order, our friends in the Wardells, who are another sort of power pop band in Victoria, were like, well, we're playing some shows at Harpo's, and if you guys are ready to go, you should start, you know, you should open for us. So we committed to that without having a name. And so we had to work through that. So there was like declaration time at after practice one night where we had to come up with a name. And we were throwing around stupid ideas. Most of them came from the menu at this like all-night coffee place that we were, you know, having our meeting at, like the Chung Kings and the Barons of Beef, and like they weren't really sticking. But 64 Funny Cars is this drag racing event that happens in Seattle every year. And growing up in Victoria, we didn't get Vancouver radio, but we got Seattle radio. And so on KISW, which is like the rock station that we would listen to in Victoria, they would have these hilarious ads for, you know, 64 Funny Cars, Funny Cars, Funny Cars. And just like all that, like it was sort of the precursor to those like stupid monster truck ads and stuff.
Yeah.
And so someone just threw that out on the table. And then all of a sudden it was like, yeah, that sounds good. And we also had no time because the posters for the show were getting printed the next day. So we couldn't leave that restaurant until we actually had a name. And that's where 64 Funny Cars came from.
This first one is Rain Gray.
just clicked. We thought, that's it. That has to be it. So we went with it.
That's awesome. The next question I had that I was curious about is, you know, looking into 64 Funny Cars, it seemed like, you know, there were performances that have kind of happened over the decades, and also just different bands that you've all been in. But what prompted this reissue in particular? How did that come about? How did 604 Records get involved? Everything like that?
Well, what happened was, so 604 Records is you know, local label. They made a lot of their, I guess, the cachet by releasing Carly Rae Jepsen. Call Me Maybe was the one that really did it for them. And they've since, you know, been going on with lots of different releases, and they've done really well. They you know, they've released a lot of you know, local bands and international bands as well. I think one of the releases like is by Tommy Lee of Motley Crue, for instance. So but anyway, so Jonathan Simkin, who's the president of the label, he's been involved with the music scene since the 90s. And one of the things he wanted to do, you know, and as well as, you know, releasing the latest stuff by current signings, they wanted to delve into the past, and he wanted to, you know, release stuff that that he was really interested in from back in the day, from the 80s and 90s and 2000s. So that and so he created an imprint in 604 Records called Decades, 604 Decades. And he did one release or a couple of releases last year by a band called slipping my mind. Colin, help me here.
Movie Land,
yes, who he really liked back in the day. Like they played a lot of warehouse parties, I think the occasional club gig, but you know, he saw them around, and they actually never released anything officially. So that was their first release on the 604 Decades imprint, and then they had a call, just a general call for other bands from back in the day, and we. So I just sent a message saying, hey, you know, 604 or 64 Funny Cars would you know, love to be part of it, because, you know, none of our stuff was on streaming services as yet. And we thought it might be a good opportunity for having a label behind us to help us put out all our stuff on streaming services, and went through a, you know, bit of a back and forth process. They were really interested in us. Jonathan actually did not see us back in the day, but he said he enjoyed our music and just kind of went from there.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of your music, one thing I was really struck by is, I think a lot of times when I find records from old sort of more underground bands, either from Vancouver or Victoria, there is this sort of more like punk kind of harsher sound with a lot of the ones I've listened to, at least. So when I've discovered 64 Funny Cars and Happy Go Lucky, I was like, oh, this is so like bouncy and positive. And at the back of the record, it said one of like your musical inspirations was Styx, but I'm wondering like what some of the other I'm wondering what other like bands and groups and artists and musicians sort of informed the sound of 64 Funny Cars.
Okay, moving on from Styx, which is a representation of our sarcastic tone that runs through pretty much everything that we do.
Well, the whole reference to Styx in the back of the record was something from back at that time. It's like I think it said, and to Styx, who we've never met, but is certainly who we never met, but remain a big inspiration to us. It was totally sarcastic. I think it was something that somebody made comment that made at that time, and we were kind of referencing that.
Yeah. But it's funny, like the very first interview that I think we ever did, it was for Monday Magazine, which was like the local arts sort of weekly in Victoria. Tim declared, we're not a pop band. It's like, okay, well, that was actually kind of not true, but I don't know what, maybe because like Tim wanted us to like, you know, get plugged into like the punk scene a little bit more or something like that. But definitely like pop influences and stuff. So, I mean, Tim had always like written a lot of, you know, kind of more jangly pop influence songs, you know, about love and relationships and all sorts of stuff. But then there was also like an interest around sort of country sort of stuff. And so actually Eric Lowe, our drummer, just before 64 Funny Cars, he did this project called Eric and Elmer, which was around like a whole bunch of, you know, just silly 12-bar country songs and things like that. So we always had that sort of influence as well. But there was, like, in that sort of late 80s period and going into the 90s, like, certainly, like, the more punk stuff or even down to Seattle, which was, like, an equally big influence for us, was about sort of grunge starting to emerge and kind of the heavier bands like Green River or Mother Love Bone and things like that. But there's also like a huge pop scene, right? So like bands like the Posies and the Young Fresh Fellows and the Wardells were always around. And so there was still like, it didn't get the headlines that, you know, the punk scene like DOA or No Means No would get, you know, which they rightfully should get, or kind of that emerging kind of heavier scene. Like there was always a thread of like goofy, fun, crafted pop songs that were sort of emerging. So that was kind of the lane that we sort of, you know, went into.
Yeah. And the other thing we should mention here, since we're doing an interview on campus radio, is all of us were involved with campus radio at that time. So a lot of the stuff that we enjoyed and played, say, on our radio shows, you know, were big influences on us. There's stuff like, you know, Colin mentioned Young Fresh Fellows and the Posies. There's also bands like the Huda Gurus from Australia, who are still around as well. But, you know, we love that band a lot, the Replacements. Another Seattle band called the Fastbacks were also, you know, big influences on us. So, yeah, we took, you know, we took a lot of that stuff and added our own spin to it. And I just found our album here. And, yeah, we said Styx, whom we've never met, but remain a constant inspiration to us. That was, somebody said that back in the day, and it was just a reference to that. So it was a sarcastic thing. But I think we were used to just say that a lot to our to ourselves.
Coming up next by 64 Funny Cars is Flat World. Oh my God, is that really the time? Are you sure your clock isn't running fast like it usually does? We just talk so easily. Dreaming about sleeping on your parents' bed. Time is not on our side. It keeps running away and we can never catch up. I forget who I am when you hold me close. It seems you'll never let go. Who needs new weeds before work when we have our flat world? That's all we'll have to know. The time never was too slow. Maybe we should call some friends. They must be wondering to what the heck is going on? They can think what they think. As long as we stay here, everything is fine. It's not on our side. It keeps running away and we can never catch up. Columbus can't eat his hat. I believe that the world is flat. Columbus can't eat his hat. I believe that the world. Something I was curious about was having this reissue being done and revisiting this album that you had made like 30 plus years ago. What is that experience like? I'd imagine that if you're going as far as reissuing it, like it is obviously a piece of art that you stand by, but like looking back at the music that you put out when you were like in your early 20s or even before then, is there like a sense of cringe or like discomfort that comes with that, or anything that you look back at and you're like, oh, this is something that like I made when I was this age and it shows?
You ask each individual member of the band about that, but I mean, there is some aspect of you know, a little bit of cringiness, because you know, it's very of its time, because you know, I wrote most of the songs on the album, and you know, they totally relate to stuff that was happening to me back then, you know, mostly relationship oriented. You know, there's you know, relationships that didn't go well, there's new relationships, so that sort of thing. But but overall, you know, I think the songs stand up really well. I'm really proud of what we created. You look back I had already been writing songs since I was in high school. So, and at that time I was in my early 20s, and really, you know, I got, you know, it was great to have a chance to start writing songs, and I just got a lot better pretty quickly, I think. And again, I think the songs still stand up really well. And it's great to be able to share that again, you know, via streaming services and, you know, re-entry on campus charts as well.
Yeah. But it's also, you know, reflecting back on the time in which we recorded it, and also like the constraints by which we recorded it. So like that album, you know, Happy Go Lucky, like recorded in a weekend on that like old school 8-track, like 8-track reel to reel. On a mixing board and studio board that Conrad Udo, the producer, would have to like give a serious hip check to once in a while to like solve some of the electrical problems that were going on within it. Like all of a sudden there'd be like this massive buzz going on, and you know, he'd go underneath it for 20 minutes and come back up and stuff. So we didn't have the money. We were sleeping in our van. We were like bathing in Green Lake, you know, in Seattle. We were eating at Albertsons and our, you know, and drinking, you know, the worst possible, but affordable beer. So it's not like what recording is now, even at like at a home studio level, right? I mean, people are doing stuff that sounds like 10 times more fidelity, you know, using their iPhone than what we had available to us as well. So there's like a bit of a production sort of gap that, you know, I think we just have to sort of acknowledge as well. Although all of our recordings went to somebody in Montreal who's like the master of taking like old analog recordings and making them better for streaming services, not by changing anything, but just like kind of upping them a little bit. And that made a big difference. But yeah, as Tim mentions, like it's weird in that sense, because it's been, you know, such a long period of time, like coming up on close to 40 years, but we never not like those songs. Like we never not had fun playing those songs, which we have, you know, relatively consistently, you know, sometimes with gaps of like, I don't know, 5-10 years, but like we never stopped playing those songs.
And what's it like now playing those songs? You know, you performed at Catalano recently. You're doing a reissue performance party coming up soon. Have you found that like the crowds and the response you've gotten are from people that, you know, are from back in the day, like, oh, we loved 64 Funny Cars? Or is it kind of a mix also of people who are discovering you for the first time and are just really into it as well?
Yeah, it's definitely a mix. When we played at Catalano, you know, we saw a lot of friends there from back in the day, even from not back in the day, new friends that we've met in, you know, in the 16 years, but of the same age as us. But, you know, we've released the album, and it's done really well on campus radio. So I think, I think we have gotten a new audience. You know, we got to play all around the world as well on various internet radio stations, like in the States and in Europe as well. So, yeah, it's just been great. I think, it kind of speaks to sort of the world we're in right now, where, you know, this kind of harkens back to a simpler time. As Colin said, you know, we recorded on 8-track reel to reel. You know, it's a real human, kind of recording. All the imperfections are there and all that stuff. Right. And that's, you know, a nice antidote to all the AI crap and it's even Spotify crap that's out there right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, again, like our origin story, like from inspiration to how we all, you know, we came together as a band, the best experiences of our, you know, that period when we were together the first time was all around campus radio. Like that was the heartbeat of it. I mean, you know, maybe an apex moment was like in what, end of 1989, beginning of 1990. I can't remember exactly where we're like, you know, we're at the radio station and we get the college radio chart, which is the assembly of all the different college radio playlists across the country. And we're like number six, wedged in between like Red Hot Chili Peppers and the Jesus and Mary Chain. Of course, No Means No was number one because they were always number one, as they should be. But for us to then, like in 2026, to see our name on campus radio charts like across the country is just like, it's totally mind-blowing. And it's kind of satisfying in that sense because like that's, you know, we wouldn't have ever been a band if there wasn't, you know, campus radio. Because like back then, there's no streaming, there's no nothing. Like that's how people learned about us, was like listening to CJSF or listening to campus stations at McGill or, you know, University of Saskatchewan or whatever the case is. Like that was the place where you found, you know, independent music, you know, especially Canadian bands.
Up next on the album, Given. One thing I wanted to show you is because I have the original record right here. It actually says property of CJIV because that's what we were back in the day. And it shows here all the people that played it and the timesheets for it.
I remember the timesheets on records.
One thing I'm curious about is that in the back here, it's a full paragraph of thank yous. And I was wondering if you could speak on some of them. Just because I was curious, like, for example, someone by the name of Janice McKenzie is the very first name on the thank you list here. And I'm wondering why what the significance of Janice was in the making of this album for them to be the very first name.
Well, Janice is, you know, a good, very good friend of ours, you know, and has remained and stuff. But we initially met Janice through CITR. And so Janice was on air at CITR, but also wrote. I think our column was called Local Motion. Was that, am I getting that right, Tim?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And so we did, I mean, if you think that the recording fidelity of Happy-Go-Lucky is, you know, questionable, you should hear our first cassette that we did, which was recorded literally onto like a Tascam like unit like this big. And so we did an initial 8-song cassette in like just as we started, and that went out to college radio stations, you know, across the country. And so Janice picked it up and she wrote about it, gave us some really good props and stuff like that. And then that turned into basically being sort of the equity that got us like our first gigs over in Vancouver as well. So
she wrote for Discorder magazine, which I,